Episode 16.
Getting to the point where you can overcome the fear of failure and just go for it with no fear, that's where you truly unleash your true potential.
You might be smarter, your daddy might own a company, but you will not outwork me.
This one right here is for the people.
I'm your host, Ryan J. Owens, current pro athlete, entrepreneur, and former USA national team volleyball player. I will not be defined by my athleticism alone, but I've learned how to leverage it to stay passionate about it and prepare for life. That's why the Beyond Athletic podcast was born. I'll bring you case studies of current and former elite athletes making it happen in life, as well as tips and lessons from top sources in sports, nutrition, fitness, entrepreneurship, and more. I'm here to tell you that you are beyond athletic. Welcome everybody again to the Beyond Athletic podcast. Today's guest is David Elliott Doiser. He led his D2, which is a smaller NCAA college team, to the Final Four of the NCAA four times. I first met Dave this last summer in Phoenix, Arizona at the PVL Premier Volleyball League Championships during the USAV Open, which is the biggest tournament in America for volleyball. There used to be international teams, but this year Dave was our coach. And it was fun to get to know him a little bit. And a great group of guys. I enjoyed it so much. I thought it'd be great to bring him on because the energy he brought to the court and the consistency in terms of just how he coached. He never got really upset. He never got too excited. He was always calm and collected. And that helped us be as a team that way too. And today we get into a lot about building self-confidence on the court. We get into how you do that through competitive environments, through positive reinforcement, and really through just creating situations where players can succeed. So for coaches, these are great tips. For players, this is really good to look into, to remember while you're training. We get a little bit of his bio, why he got into coaching, how he became as good as he did by basically being mentored by the USA national team coaches, and how he made that happen, actually, which is a fun story. Because he didn't just sit back and wish it to happen, he made it happen. We go into some of the people who are most influential in his life, who helped him be the coach he is today. And we also talked a bit about foreign versus American players, the differences between them. And he gives some tips to high school and college students on how to be better in training. So you're really going to want to hear this show, you're going to enjoy it. It's a couple days before Christmas here, so if you get time to listen to it before, Merry Christmas. If you hear it after, Merry Christmas. If you do like it, make sure you go to beyondathletic.com/review. That's R-E-V-I-E-W. But those reviews really help me know that I'm on the right track and you guys like what's happening. You can give ideas, and I'm going to pick a review each new episode to say on the air. It'll help everybody raise their level. So enjoy the show, guys. Hey, guys, this is Ryan J. Owens with the Beyond Athletic podcast. Welcome to the show. Today we've got on a fantastic and well-deserved champion in the NCAA, Dave Doiser. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for taking time. I guess I should tell people how we met, which was just recently, but I knew about you before because I grew up in Evanston, which is a suburb of Chicago. I played at Evanston Township, and one of my first teams that I was looking at was Loyola and Lewis, because in high school in 1997 and 98, you guys were doing pretty well. I think actually my senior years when you guys went to the Final Four again, maybe the second or third time. But so I knew you before we met. We met in May at USA Open. Dave was coaching Great Lakes and we won the championship. And I gotta say, in my first experience with you, Dave, I was super impressed. Very calm, always keeping a light move, but very, very serious. So I can tell why you were champion coach. I want to tell people a little bit about you. So you were born January 26, 1966. You grew up in Chicago?
Yeah, I was born actually in North Carolina because my dad was a Marine and he was stationed in Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. So I was born there, but both of my parents were originally from the Chicago area, Hyde Park. And by the time I was a year old, my dad had retired and moved us back to Chicago. So this is where I grew up.
I came when I was around 1.5, too. So getting into your bio, I want people to know a little bit more about what you've done because you've done a bunch. Let's say you were in your coaching career, USA Volleyball Apprentice in the summer of 87. You're a women's assistant coach at Loyola University of Chicago, 1991, for 92 seasons, right?
Correct. I was there 91 and 92 season. Yeah. So 2 years.
Yeah. And then Richards High School head boys coach for 1992. And you were state champions. You were undefeated that year with 41 wins. That's pretty incredible. And then you moved on to Lewis as the head men's coach from 94 to 2004. You had Final Four appearances for D1 NCAA men's volleyball in 96, 98, 2003, 2004. You're Coach of the Year in 1998 by Volleyball Mag, AVCA Men's Coach of the Year 2003, 2014 champions, yes, PBL of USA Open. So that's a lot, Dave. That's a lot.
I've been fortunate, and it's interesting how my life took a turn into competitive volleyball. But I'm sure we'll get into that.
Yeah, for sure. We definitely want to. But first, I want to ask you, what are you most grateful for in life?
I'd have to say, without question, I'm most grateful for my family. None of what I've accomplished could have been possible without the support, literal support, of my family, both financially, emotionally, and in every way possible. So I'd say family for sure.
Fantastic. And an inspirational quote that you believe in?
An inspirational quote. I guess it's cliche, but I've done, some research into sports psychology, and I just believe in I can. Even my YouTube screen name, when I went to upload a piano piece I wanted to play, my YouTube screen name was I Can Do It If I Want. It's just a positive mental approach that I take to things.
Mm-hmm. And I can attest to that because when I was signing on for our Google Hangouts today, I go, who is I Can Do It If I Want? And now I get it. I totally do. So I can. I love it. I love it. So next, I'd like to get a little bit into someone in your life, because a lot of people, they hold people close to them. And these people that are close to them or that surround them in their daily lives are usually a big part of their success, why they're successful. So in your case, what person do you feel has been most influential in your life thus far?
Well, as it relates to sport and volleyball and the path that I took, a gentleman by the name of Don Casey. I went to a private Christian school. It was an academy from second grade through high school. Same school, small, about 37 kids in my graduating class. But this was a church, Christian school. And a gentleman in our church who had played college volleyball at George Williams University, which was out in the west suburbs of Chicago, it no longer even exists. And I believe Doug Beal and several other top USA Volleyball people came out of George Williams. Well, this gentleman, Don Casey, Christian man who was a man in our church and happened to coach the girls volleyball team at the academy that I went to, he just kind of took me under his wing. He could see my passion and love for the game in like fifth grade, and there was no boys volleyball at that point in Illinois, much less at that school. And he allowed me to come to practices and kind of be a student assistant with him. And any opportunity he had to help me, to coach me, in spite of the fact that I didn't have a team to play on. And then he actually got me the connection to a AAU junior club, which back then was very, very small. It wasn't a long season, but he put me in touch with somebody to get me start playing competitively. And throughout my college coaching career, Mr. Casey, which I still call him, would constantly send me notes and letters, just let me know that he was, you know, either praying for me or, it always helped me keep things in perspective and was always there to support me. And I view him as the entire reason I got into coaching and volleyball became such a big part of my life.
Wow. So why I ask people this, Dave, is because throughout our careers, throughout our lives, it's so important that we surround ourselves with great people. In your case, this is someone you would probably call a mentor, right?
Absolutely a mentor. I got to tell you, when I was a college coach in season, I was typically, especially coming playoff time, I was a basket case. I didn't show it outwardly, but inwardly I was, you know, I was very stressed. I wanted to win. I'd worked very hard, you know, with limited resources at Lewis University, which was a small Division II school. And at the time, we didn't have the name that they have now. So I didn't have many resources. I was working 14-hour days, no assistant coach, small budget, and I was very stressed. And this was a guy that I could call when I would just be, you know, really on edge, not sleeping. And this guy would calm me down and put things in perspective for me, and definitely a mentor and somebody that I viewed is, you know, somebody I could go to at any time. And because he was a volleyball person, he could relate to what I was going through, but keep it all in perspective for me as well.
Yeah, this is really important. And I want people to take away from this, a large part of your success can be contributed to this person, because he really did show up when you needed him, and you learned so much from him. You got so much emotionally from him, that these types of people really are the people that we should be seeking in life. And this is not just for sport, because I'm sure on so many levels, this person for you means so much more than sport. And people out there that are looking for some direction, and maybe you don't have a mentor in your life. Mentors are different than, usually, I mean, you have your mother and your father and they support you. Maybe you don't have those people, but you have somebody close, like family member. But a mentor, someone who is doing what you aspire to do, is really, really important. And if you're looking for one, you definitely got to get out there and just find them. Don't be afraid to look someone up and contact them out of the blue. And if you add value to their life in some way, I'm sure that they would want to add value to yours. So do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this guy, we didn't have, like I said, we didn't have a boys volleyball team at our school. He could have very easily said, you know, hey, this practice is for the girls team. I don't have time to invest in you. But he saw my passion and love for the game, which he had. And he actually went out of his way to include me and kind of, you know, allow me to take part in practice, even if it was just playing against his starters or, you know, whatever situation he could create. And, you know, I looked at what he did for me by creating an opportunity for me where he didn't have to. And I teach private lessons after work, 4 or 5 days a week. And I've got, you know, some students that I see are just as passionate about the game as I am. And I think of what Mr. Casey was to me, and it's inspired me to try to be that to these kids.
Yes. Fantastic. Listen, now that we have an idea of what you've done and a little bit of how you've gotten there, let's go back. Tell us a story. I want you to take us back to when you were born, how you grew up, and then how you got into coaching.
Sure. So So I'm born, like I said, Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. Don't remember that because by the time I was a year old, you know, my parents had moved up to the Chicago area, and grew up in the Chicago Southwest suburbs, Oak Forest area, Tinley Park, and like I said, I grew up in a pretty Christian environment. Started attending church and a private Christian school from second grade through high school. And then I attended Bob Jones University, which is in Greenville, South Carolina. It's a fundamental Christian university that most of the graduates from my high school went to, largely because most of the faculty and staff of my school were graduates of Bob Jones. And one of my older brothers attended Bob Jones as well. And I had an opportunity to play AAU volleyball, like I said, starting about fifth grade. This Mr. Casey gives me an introduction to volleyball. I fall madly, you know, head over heels in love with the game. I'm addicted. I can't get enough of it. But there wasn't a lot of opportunities for boys to play in Illinois back then. So I go off to college not even thinking. Plus, the libero position didn't exist back then, and I'm 5'8". So, you know, for me to have played college volleyball, I really would have needed a libero position. So that wasn't going to even be an option. I go off to Bob Jones, not for volleyball. I'm pursuing a radio and television broadcasting career. And this is in the mid 80s. And I'm at a volleyball open tournament with some friends from the town of Greenville. And laying around in the gym there in between games, I see a volleyball magazine. And I didn't even know the thing existed. And I'm like, volleyball magazine? Get out of here. You know, I'm a volleyball fanatic.
Yeah.
So I tear out the little insert where you can subscribe. And I tear it out of that magazine. I bring it back to my dorm. And I fill it out, mail it off. I get my first issue of Volleyball Magazine in my mailbox on campus at Bob Jones. And I am like a kid in a candy store. I read that thing from cover to cover. I'm just glued. I'm like, wow, a whole magazine for just volleyball. So in that magazine was an article about the U.S. team. At the time, we're talking mid-80s, we're between the 84 Olympic gold medal in L.A. and the 88 Olympic gold medal in Seoul, Korea. Mm-hmm. And so this is like about 86. So I see where the USA men's team is training and located in San Diego. And they trained at the Federal Building in downtown San Diego. So I get this, you know, weird idea. I'm going to write them and tell them how much of a fan I am. And, you know, at this point, I had played a couple seasons of AAU club volleyball. I made All-American at 16 and under as a setter, you know, whoop-de-doo. But, you know, I wanted them to know I play the game. I'm not a novice, you know, but I'd like to help the team in any capacity that I could. And so I write this letter to Marv Dunphy, and I don't even tell anybody that I write the letter, and I mail it off to this address that I found in this volleyball magazine. And I said, I'm willing to help in any way I can, blah, blah, blah. Just, I'm not looking for a paycheck. I will shag balls. I'll wash uniforms. I just want to be around the sport at this level. So I mail it off. I'm still in school at Bob Jones in Greenville. I did, in the letter, put my home address in Oak Forest because I knew the semester was going to be coming to an end and I'd be going home for the summer. So I come home for the summer. This weeks later, all of a sudden, this letter comes in the mail. Remember, this is before email. This is before cell phones. Mm-hmm. This letter comes in the mail, and it's got the USA Volleyball logo on the envelope. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, what is this? And it's from Gary Sato, who was the assistant coach, and he responds to my letter and says, "We're on our way to the Norseca Championship in Cuba. When we return, I'm going to call you. We'd like to discuss how you can help us." And I'm literally like, you know, having convulsions. I'm like, I don't believe this. This is actually happening. This at this time, you've got Karch Karai, Steve Timmons, Jeff Stork. I mean, these big names, Bob Stavertlik. And so a couple weeks later, I get the phone call and we discuss how I can help the team and who I'd be staying with. And next thing you know, I fly to San Diego. I'm living with Gary Sato and his brother Eric, who is a defensive specialist on the team. Mm-hmm. And I'm living in Pacific Beach, California, and I'm in the gym with my idols. These are guys who, when they would make a domestic tour around the country, and I have volleyballs with their autographs on it, you know. And here I am, I'm in the gym, and I'm observing, and my brain is a sponge, and I'm just picking up everything from the drills to Marv Dunphy's coaching style and technique. And I spent the summer of 87 as an apprentice just helping with the U.S. team. And that's where my life kind of took a turn. I no longer at that point just wanted to be in, you know, radio and television broadcasting. I decided I want to make my living in volleyball one way or another. And that was, writing that letter was actually the turning point of my entire life.
Yeah, an incredible story. And there's just so many lessons in there, Dave. And I want to try and pick out a couple just to highlight them for people. And you gave a lot of info. And what's great is that on iTunes, you can press like a 15-second back button. And I think people are going to want to do that to hear that all over again. Because listen, if you're a coach out there or you're an aspiring coach, maybe you're a player who played big time, maybe you're a player who never made it big time, but you were good at what you did and you aspire to be a coach, here's one way. You know, Dave just saw the magazine, he subscribed, he mailed them, you know, he goes, I'll help in any capacity. He offers to add value to them. And what do? They contact him back because they say, wait a minute, this person wants to just help us. Like, of course we'll take help. You get there, you're surrounded by people who are your idols. I mean, and then you just soak up everything. And then from there, you just go, hey, radio, TV, out. Volleyball, in. So listen, everybody out there, if you want something, you just got to go for it. Offer to add value and look what happens. So, Dave, that's a fantastic story. And it's not far from like how I actually made it to the national team with my experience. And someday we'll have to chat about that. But I love everything that happened in your career up until then. And we've gone over the national championships and all of that. So now what I want to do is I want to bring it to your coaching career, for instance, starting at Lewis, let's say. And I want to talk about specifically, I know that you had a bunch of players from all over. And I bet this experience with USA Volleyball and all of the ones leading up to that helped you really coach these players and mold them into great players. So one question I have for you is, at Lewis University, did you have any foreign players? Because I'm sure you did, actually. I know that. But could you tell us like maybe a little bit about the differences in strengths and weaknesses between Americans versus foreigners? And in foreigners, please include Puerto Ricans, even though they're also Americans. But
Right. Yeah, you know, I did have quite a few. Over my 11 seasons at Lewis, I had, I believe, 12 guys from Puerto Rico, 5 Canadians, 2 Brazilians, a guy from Mexico, a guy from New Zealand. And it's interesting, you know, people think I was jet setting all over the world trying to find these guys, and that simply isn't the case. I didn't have a budget to recruit, and I wasn't making very much money at all at Lewis, and I didn't have the money to be traveling all over the world. Obviously this podcast isn't the place for me to tell you how I recruited them all, but suffice it to say that they all pretty much fell into my lap or word of mouth. And you know, I initially went after 4 Canadians when I was first hired to start the program at Lewis from scratch. I had just finished coaching club high school, and my boys' Second City Volleyball Club out of Chicago back then, which existed, had played this team out of Ontario, Canada, in the championship of this Great Lakes Festival boys tournament, and these guys were really good. And obviously, you know, we played them tough, but they were all from the Ontario provincial team. and they were just extremely developed. So that club season ends. I get named the head coach at Lewis like 6 months later. I've got a year to build an entire program, and obviously I had all my recruiting dollars in one lump because it wasn't tied up in any players because I'm just starting. Mm-hmm. So I decided, hey, where did all those guys on that Thunderbirds Canadian team go? And I went through, this is just sounds so medieval, but I went through old phone records from a phone conversation I had with the coach of that team, and I found his number. And I called him. I'm like, where did all your players go? And he's like, well, a couple of them went here, blah, blah, blah. And they were all staying up in Canada. And he put me in touch with several of the guys. And long story short, I ended up getting four of the guys from that Canadian team. Mm-hmm. And they were all going to be sophomores because they had all then gone to their freshman year. The next year was when I'd be starting my program at Lewis. So I get that group, and by their third year, we're at the Final Four, our third year in 96. And three of those four guys were starters on that team and were the core of that group. So I think because I'm at a small Division II private school like Lewis, and I was trying to get all the top U.S. talent, but they were fleeing at the time. Loyola started 2 years after Lewis. There wasn't much in the Midwest other than, you know, Ohio State and Ball State. So most of your top talent, Scott Tuzinski, Sean Rooney, these guys are all, you know, fleeing to the West Coast and sunny beaches. So I'm like, I can either settle for, you know, mediocre players of what's left, or I can go for the Puerto Ricans and these Canadians who maybe cost a little bit more, but I can probably get more raw talent that way. And that's why I did it. As far as how they were different, I think when you're going away when you're leaving your home country to go away to, you know, to play volleyball and to study, you know, it's not to say I didn't have American students that were awesome, you know, academic and athletic. But I think the foreign guys I had were by and large a little bit more mature and maybe took it a little bit more seriously since, you know, they were, like I said, leaving their country to go to a foreign country to study. They seemed to be a little bit less interested in partying, a little bit more interested in their education and what they were there to do.
Mm-hmm. So they were more focused.
I would say that's safe to say, yeah.
Yeah. See, and why I'm asking this, and that's actually really interesting. I love how you started off and trying to build that program. It takes a lot of hard work, and that's very obvious because there's much more to that story, I know. The reason why I want people to hear this is for coaches out there that are scouting, for players out there that are looking to get to colleges outside of their own country. There's a lot of possibilities for you, and you've just got to make that contact. You know, people just aren't going to find you. And one of the great things is that foreigners coming into this situation in the States, you've got to realize, yes, you have kind of an upper hand. You're more mature. You're definitely, you've experienced more in life probably, especially let's say Europeans and people come from South America, from more difficult, let's say, economies and political groups and et cetera, et cetera. But on the other side, as an American, you've got to realize you've got these guys that are hungry, they're intelligent, and they're talented. And if you want to make it in your sport, you've got to step up. You've got to mature. You've got to take things seriously. You've got to be a leader. And so I hope that they take that away from what you're just telling them. And that's why I asked. So
definitely you got to make the contact, and nothing ventured, nothing gained, for sure. And there's definitely opportunities out there.
Yeah. Speaking of these differences and maturity and let's say focus and all of that, self-confidence is a really big thing on the court, on the field, whatever kind of athlete you are. And I know that's something you wanted to talk about today. So could you go over briefly some bullet points, and then we'll get into a little bit about each, how you believe players out there could build self-confidence and tools that coaches could perhaps use?
Sure. You had mentioned, I don't know if I want to get ahead of you here, but you had mentioned you know, identifying your aha moment of your career and, you know, maybe the one thing that happened that is, you know, makes you realize this ties it all together. Well, I'm a young high school coach at Richards High School, and I had coached these guys at sophomore level when boys volleyball started in Illinois, which was 1990, but we didn't have a state championship that year. And 91, I moved up to the varsity with that same core group of guys, and I had been training them on court, really passing on everything I learned during my time as an apprentice with USA Volleyball. I mean, we are practicing 4 hours a day. We are making sure technique and repetition. We're training like the Japanese and the Chinese, just insane amount of repetition and attention to detail and technique. And we get to the unofficial state championship in 91 because the IHSA, Illinois High School Athletic Association, didn't sponsor it that year. And we lose the unofficial state championship to Downers Grove North. And that didn't sit well with me. All my guys were juniors, but I remember going home that night and getting in my bedroom. And, you know, I put on a very professional persona, shook hands, very, you know, gracious in the defeat. And I came home and got in my bedroom, and I remember crying. I remember throwing a chair. I just, losing that match didn't sit well with me. So in between that year and the next, when my whole team would be returning, I'm at a volleyball facility coaching or just watching recruiting, you know, watching some club players play. And I go into this volley shop and I'm buying a pair of socks or a t-shirt or something, and I'm at the register, and sitting there on the counter while I'm paying is these cassettes. And once again, I'm dating myself because these are cassettes and not CDs. there's these cassettes, and it said Living the Miracle audio action cassette, and there's a picture of a volleyball player on it. And I read a few of the bullet points on the cassette about, you know, learn how to retrain your mind and blah, blah, blah. So I pick one of these up. You know, I'm like, hey, whatever I can do to get my team to the next level, I can't possibly train them on court any more than we have. So I go home and I pop this cassette in and I listen to it. And this, in short, this is all about positive reinforcement, mental rehearsal, visualization, self-confidence. And it's basically a sports psychology cassette. So I am hooked, sold. I go back to that volleyball store the next day and I bought them out. I purchased 10 more cassettes. I wanted to give one to every guy on my team. So I bought every one of them. I have a team meeting at my house where we listen to it together as a group, and I kind of introduced it to the guys, and I handed each one of them their own and said, I want you guys to go home, and any opportunity you get, I want you to listen to this when you're going to sleep at night. Put your headphones on, put your, you know, radio on in your room, in your bedroom. And it basically took you through visualization and how to replace negative thoughts and fears on the court with positive experiences and confidence, because I really felt the reason we had lost the year before in the state championship is there was two like really big marquee players on this team of Downers Grove North, and I thought we were a better all-around team, but we were intimidated by these names. I don't know if you know Omar Moran.
Yes, of course.
But okay, so Omar, I ended up recruiting to play for me at Lewis. He was on my first team, but Omar was a big, he was way ahead of everybody. Omar was, you know, a big Illinois volleyball player before anybody was, and my guys were intimidated by Omar, and I thought we just really got so nervous we couldn't execute. So we institute this sports psychology, and we go back a year later. Omar's a senior now with same group of guys. We are more mentally prepared and tough than we were the year before. We were just really rock solid. And we march through the season. We beat Downers Grove North twice. We go 41-0 and we win the state championship. So
wow.
For me, finding that cassette and buying into what mental rehearsal and building self-confidence to a point where you're not never intimidated on the floor and you don't believe that you can lose. That and finding ways for me to instill that in my players and make them believe that they can't be beat. And you mix that with a good work ethic and all of the training. That was my aha moment. So, you know, to hit your bullet points, creating, situations in practice where they can be successful so that they believe that they can achieve on the court, building trust with my players so they know that I'm on their side, I'm pulling for them, I want nothing more than for them to be successful. So using positive reinforcement, getting off the bench and cheering when they do something well so they can look over and see somebody that's really rooting for them, and greatly minimizing the times where I'm yelling at them or pointing out their mistakes. I'm not really big into doing that. So that's where I see the importance of building confidence in your players, because I just think it brings out the best in their performance on the floor.
Yeah. Wow, Dave. There's a lot of value bombs you just dropped in there, and I mean like a ton. But just some takeaways for people. I mean, going back and talking about, you had lost that match and you were sportsmanlike. This sportsmanship is very commendable. I see time and time again, especially in professional sports. I mean, I've been playing since 2002 professionally in over 12 countries, like living, and then over 30 countries actually playing matches. And I have seen some of the worst losers in the world. And it really is so defeating when you see a coach who's just like not in control of his own emotions, because that leads to players not being able to control theirs, not have confidence in themselves. So you see, Dave here, whatever I can do to get my team to the next level. And he sees this tape, and this is what he says to himself. He goes out there, and I love what you're talking about, because players out there, you've got to remember, and coaches too, the mental, the psychological part of the game, and that means preparation-wise, so training. Go home, do these things. If you can't find the audio, there's definitely ways that you can do it. But visualizing, thinking processes, like switching them from being fear-based to process-based, like what can I do to do these actions well, instead of I can't do these actions because I'll probably fail, right?
Correct. There's no substitute for training, on-court training, and correct technique, and putting the time in the gym and the sweat and the competitive environment of practice. There's no substitute. But if coaches or athletes miss developing the mental side of whatever sport they're in and only focus on the physical side, they're never going to fully reach their true potential. And that goes, you know, I'm a big tennis buff. I've gone to the U.S. Open in New York 3 years in a row. I play. And there's so much to be learned from the mental toughness that professional tennis players or any individual sport, I believe, because you're out there, you know, you're out there alone, and a lot goes through your head. And you'll hear professional tennis players during interviews saying, I just need to decide to go for my shots. Well, playing tennis, I know what it's like when you're warming up and you're being real aggressive and you can't miss. And then as soon as you're like, okay, let's start playing, we're going to keep score. And then all of a sudden you just start batting the ball back and not going for your shots because you don't want to make a mistake. Mm-hmm. And getting to the point where you can overcome the fear of failure and just go for it with no fear, that's where you truly unleash your true potential. And that only comes through either born inherent self-confidence, and some people have it, and there a lot of people think they're cocky, they're arrogant. I don't mind a cocky player, as long as that cocky player has class and treats other people properly, because I want the guy in the court that doesn't think he can lose, or that anybody on the court is as good as him or better than him. That I want that, and that's that in some people that don't have that self-confidence, that needs to be trained. And that goes, that only occurs through mental rehearsal. And, you know, knowing that the person behind you, whether it's your coach, your teammates, that they believe in you. Yeah. So it, you know, it even goes to creating a team environment that is conducive for people to be successful and not, you know, argumentative on the court or, you know, not wanting a starting position so badly that you're willing to tear your teammates down.
Yeah. So some of the main points that I see here is after you decided, listen, it's not just physical anymore because we're training well, we're doing everything possible in terms of skill building and keeping them strong, but maybe it is this mental part. And then hearing that tape, who listens to tapes, Dave?
Yeah. Well, in 1991, we did.
It's true.
Because
it's true.
The alternative were 8 tracks.
Yeah, right. No, so you hear this tape, right? And then you go, guys, I want you to buy into this. Take it home. Listen to it. You want to create this sense of not believing that you can be defeated. And how you're basically saying that people can do this, so for players and coaches out there, is A, build trust. So have a competitive, a unified environment where kids can really, and athletes can really just feed off of each other. So they're learning how to compete.
Correct. We're in this together. And, you know, as a coaching staff and players, we've got our goals and we're in this together. So correct. Yeah.
So building trust is one. Building a positive reinforcement by not being that person who's, you know, criticizing players when they make errors, but basically minimizing, pointing out mistakes and making sure that they feel supported by you by saying, hey, great job, you know. And then 3 is creating situations for success in training so that they don't feel like every time they try to do something, they fail. So they start performing free from that fear of failure.
Correct. And that goes to just sitting down and building a practice plan. And whether you're doing wash drills or, you know, whatever competitive drills you're doing, you want your starters to be challenged, but not you don't want the drill scoring to be impossible for them to be successful. Otherwise, it just creates frustration. So you want to create situations where they can be successful.
Great. So moving on, I definitely want, because there's a lot in there and I'm sure people got a lot from it, I want to go through some things, some positive things you see in players. But first, I would like to hear what out there, so people can understand how athletes can fail. What do you see as being the top, let's say, common mistakes of athletes in your field and maybe other fields?
You know, I think living a healthy lifestyle is big. You know, you played for me for 4 days in Phoenix, and we met actually, you know, literally a week before that. Mm-hmm. And you know, you saw the little thing I sent out to everybody just about, you know, staying focused and not, not making, the tournament about partying or, you know, substances or, so I think that one of the biggest mistakes I have seen, because remember this last year coaching PBL was my first venture into coaching professionals. And I knew I had to handle it a little differently because you guys are not college age. You're adults and you've seen the world a lot more than me even. So, you know, most of my experience has been with high school and college students. And for me, one of the biggest mistakes I saw, was just getting caught up in the partying and watching it deteriorate them physically. Mm-hmm. What alcohol abuse and even, you know, tobacco use or whatever, it just, it's so counterproductive for what you're trying to create in an athlete. So I think, you know, just eating healthy, you know, taking care of your body, that's one of the keys, you know, to success. And it's also one of the, you said, you know, one of the things that I've seen cause athletes to fail. Mm-hmm. I think if they're willing to sacrifice some of those, you know, what would be considered social things, it makes what they're trying to do all the more important, because they're like, hey, I'm giving up A, B, and C for, you know, for this team and my volleyball career or whatever sport it is. So it makes it a little bit more important. I would say just, you know, staying organized is a big key to success, because if you are a student athlete or a professional athlete, in the case of if you're just playing a sport, then you probably have a little bit more free time. But if you're working and trying to play or going to school and play, you've got to balance, you know, you've got to have a happy balance of time, mm-hmm. to devote to your sport and whatever it is, whatever else you're doing, whether it's studies or working. So organizational skills are really important. If I look at the best athletes I've coached over the years, they are just truly professional, motivated, organized. They have their priorities. And the other thing I would say is just setting goals. You know, I read an article once, it compared going through life without goals to trying to play a basketball game without a hoop. And it was very, very interesting little brief article that, you know, creates the whole scenario. The two teams are ready for the tip-off. You know, the sweat's on their foreheads and the fans are in the stands and, you know, the official tosses the ball and the home team gets possession of the ball. They dribble down the court and their star player goes to up for a jump shot and he looks and there's no hoop. And they all stopped and everybody looked at each other and the game ended. And it's like, okay, how do you go through your life without goals? Without anything to shoot for. So I'm a firm believer in setting personal, and if you're a coach, team goals. And I think, you know, the best athletes I have coached and or observed, they have goals, they're organized, and they're willing to make sacrifices.
Yeah. Without goals is like playing basketball without a hoop. I love it. I love it. Listen, you've gone through some mistakes, and basically, I mean, what I got from that is healthy lifestyles is really what kills a lot of athletes. And you know what, Dave? Honestly, I know it was your first time handling some professionals in Phoenix, Arizona this past year with us. And I gotta say, as a professional athlete, as a USA national team player, we, and I'm including myself, we party way too much. We take things way too lightly sometimes. And you know what? I've been successful and been someone who partied, but I just wonder sometimes, how much more successful could I have been during those times when I was doing that? Because now I've cut it out and I'm much more focused, and you know, it just kills players, because I've seen players go under because of it. So the ways that you said were healthy traits, the successful traits of athletes would be, you know, live healthy lifestyles and be organized and get your priorities and goals straight. Very important. Written goals is a huge thing. So thanks for sharing that. I like, speaking of goals, because I'm sure you have goals in your life. I know it for sure. And there's probably more goals you have, and you've already accomplished a ton. Speaking of the ones that you have accomplished, what, until now, is your proudest moment?
I can look at, you know, several nights of my life, whether it was in 1992 when my high school team won our state championship and how hard I worked for that and how that felt. Mm-hmm. And then fast forward to 2003 when my Lewis team at Long Beach won the NCAA championship over BYU. And I know what the elation, what that felt like. I know what it felt like in Phoenix, you know, when Match Point went down and we won. And I can honestly say, no matter what the level, you could say, oh, well, how does an Illinois boys state championship compare to an NCAA national championship? But it's the level that you're competing at, and it's all the same thing. And I'd have to say I can't differentiate the feeling between those three moments. Each one of them resulted in a championship at the level that they were. One was college, one was pro, and one was high school. And I can honestly say they all meant the same to me. And obviously, you know, I was my 10th year at Lewis when we won the NCAA championship. So that championship in 2003 was the culmination of 10 years of work, whereas our PVL championship here in May was the result of about 3 months of getting you guys together and some training and coaching. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I guess I worked harder for the NCAA championship, but at match point, the feeling of winning was the same for all three of them.
Yeah. Great. So now we've gone through so much, and I definitely want to wrap up here. So I want to kind of give a toolbox for people, something that they can see how other professionals that are excelling in their sports, how they react in life, how they operate in life. So keeping that in mind, I'm just going to ask you a few things really fast so we can wrap up here. And the first one would be, how long do you sleep? And what's your, let's say, pre-game ritual? Like, how do you prep for matches?
Okay. How long do I sleep? I make an effort to get, you know, 7.5 to 8 hours of sleep a night. I'm a firm believer. If you do any research or talk to any doctors, I mean, eating healthy is important, but getting the proper amount of rest is so huge, and letting your body recover, or just, you know, keeping your immune system strong to fight off, you know, viruses, colds, flu, whatever. So I try to get seven and a half to 8 hours a night if possible. And as far as pregame ritual, you know, you can't substitute. You got to have your team mentally prepared. So watching video of an opponent, if you have the opportunity, or at least getting in the gym and seeing them play, knowing as much as you can about your opponent, their strengths and weaknesses, that's huge. So, you know, when I was a college coach, I prepared as well as I could, you know, detailed scouting reports of what was going to work for us against the team, and what kind of matchup. You know, matchups can be huge because, you know, in volleyball in particular, the cliche, you're only as strong as your weakest link, is not the case. You can hide weaknesses and take advantage of your team's strengths. And I think that's one of the things I have been able to do well throughout my career is devising offensive systems or setting up my team well to take advantage of our strengths and minimize our weaknesses. So matchups against an opponent, for me, putting in the time to study an opponent, feeding my team as much information as possible. And then in some cases, just preparing my team mentally. If it's a big match, and I've had a couple of situations where there's a lot of pressure, it's a big rival, it's a playoff match. If we lose, our season's over. Trying to remove that pressure by keeping the attitude and the atmosphere light in the locker room or whatever, and just, you know, this isn't live or die here, guys. At the end of this match, we're still all going home, and we still have great lives to live. So for me, it's about, you know, minimizing the stress and making my team feel like this is about having fun, and this is opportunity for us to showcase everything we've worked for. We're not here to lose this match. We're here to play. So, you know, there's a number of things that would go into a pregame, but it pretty much scouting, just knowing your opponent is, as I would say, is probably the biggest factor.
Great. And what's a book or learning resource you love to use to learn new things?
Obviously, with the internet now, the opportunities to go online and go on YouTube and get new ideas for drills, as far as you know, something that might be new, cutting edge. I'm kind of old school when it comes to methods of training on court. Everything goes back to my experience with the national team, but I do like to go online and, you know, search some YouTube videos for drills. The other tool is, you know, there's a book called Volleyball Cybernetics that was written by the gentleman who produced the cassette tape that I told you about, Living the Miracle. I believe Volleyball Cybernetics is still available out there on the internet somewhere. I don't believe the Living the Miracle is, but that's how, you know, the things that I use today at this point in my career. It's pretty much at this point just going online and looking for new drills.
Yeah. And what book would you give away as an athlete or to an athlete as a gift?
Definitely Volleyball Cybernetics, because I think it's more important. A coach is going to develop an athlete physically, and their God-given athletic ability to a certain extent is going to determine, you know, what they can accomplish physically. But I think the greatest overlooked area is the mental preparation. And I think and how to effectively visualize to train your body to do what you want it to do. Yeah. And so for me, it would be Volleyball Cybernetics.
Yeah. Fantastic. I'll have to link that up in the show notes with the author and everything. I do want to put a personal note in there. There are some fantastic books out there that don't sometimes relate to your sport. I mean, I've read a mental training book that was for tennis players, but you can get so much value out of a lot of these books because you can use the skills across all fields, all sports, all things in life. So thank you for sharing. Now, what I like to highlight on the show also is that adding value is really important. And you add value in a lot of different ways to your athletes, but it's important that we add value around us in our world as we live in. So what's a cause or thing you like to do to add value to other people's lives?
Well, I have to say I had a new experience after the PVL National Championship. USA Volleyball sent a group of all-stars to Houston to the Boys Junior Olympics in Houston this last June. And the president of the USA PVL League, Steve Bishop, set up an opportunity for the 18 athletes and coaches to visit Texas Children's Hospital and visit these kids. We had all the guys wear their uniform jerseys, and here's all these big 6'7", you know, athletes. And I had never experienced that, and it made such a huge impact on me that I've done actually some looking into having my local PBL guys here that play for Great Lakes now doing it. And it's definitely something that's close to my heart now and something that I want to do moving forward. It was incredibly moving to visit these kids and see them. You know, some of them may have been terminally ill. We weren't allowed to ask. I wouldn't have wanted to know. It was emotional enough. That's something that I really intend to do a lot more of in the future with my team, and not take for granted the health and physical ability that you know we all have, and take it to these kids in the hospital and put a smile on their face.
That's fantastic. You know, and actually just a couple of days ago I was thinking about that, and it's something that I want to do, because I told you a little bit about Elite Sports Students, the non-for-profit project that I have going, trying to build worldwide. Thanks so much for filling out the survey and willing to give some advice on that, because it's going to be really positive impact for kids. But, you know, there's so many different ways we can add value. And this way that you highlighted is one of the most special, because I could only imagine if I were a child and I were sick, and I could just, in my world, you know, I don't just see these people who do things I can only dream of at this point. And maybe I feel like it could come true, but I have no connection with them. And so one of my plans is to just grab a random friend here in Belgrade, Serbia, and say, let's go to the hospital and let's visit some kids. Because, you know, I did that a long time ago, Dave, too. And it was one of the most amazing feelings still to this day that I've ever had. So listen, I want to wrap up here, but before I do, I've got two things left. But before I get to them, how people can connect with you, and we're going to go through your definition of being beyond athletic. What do you have cooking for you these days? Like, what projects are you working on?
Well, you know, I have a full-time job. I'm an office manager. I teach private lessons 5 days a week after work. So I've got about a dozen students that I train on a regular basis. And then obviously just preparing for this next PVL season. I'm going to be starting practices with all of our local guys in early January. Half of our team, you included, are overseas, and we won't have you guys back until, you know, just before before we head off to Nationals. But I am training the local guys and actively searching for new talent to add to this Great Lakes team for the future.
Awesome. Tell us a little bit about this, the Volleyball Institute.
Well, the Volleyball Institute was created just as a means for inexperienced coaches, newer coaches, to be able to take an online coaches clinic with
awesome.
For very, very inexpensive in the privacy of their own home. They can register for the course. They have access to it for 3 months. They can watch sections over. There's not only demonstration of the proper technique for all skills, but then there's drills, which I had, you know, 10, 12 kids in the gym actually demonstrating the drills that these coaches can use to develop the technique. So it's a comprehensive course of A to Z, every skill, and how to develop your players.
So it's for coaches. That's fantastic. So coaches listening, head on over. The site's going to be linked up in the show notes. It's thevolleyballinstitute.com. And how can people get in contact with you, Dave?
You know, my email is still lewismensvolleyball@msn.com. I've been gone for Lewis for a number of years now, but everybody had that email address, and I've just kept it. It was my personal address. So lewismensvolleyball@msn.com is my email, and that's definitely the best way. It's linked to my phone, and I check it 20 times a day. So.
All right. And I know you're new to the Facebook world. Is there any possible way that could be an option also?
I've got a Facebook account that I'm on, you know, regularly, and you know, that's fine as well.
Okay, fantastic. So I'll link all that up in the show notes. I know the Facebook is how we first connected, and that was a funny story, by the way, about us first talking on there. But listen, I want to wrap up, and I want you to keep in mind, most top-level athletes, you know, especially pro, even college, they end up lost. They end up, after sport, not having any direction. Maybe even in sport, they end up in abusive relationships. They could lose all of their money. They could really lose their direction, end up clinically depressed. I mean, the stats on that are astounding. So in keeping that in mind and making sure that people don't mistake success with excellence, there's actually, you know what? I want to share this with you. And it's a quote from a football coach. You might know him, Joe Paterno, Penn State.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to summarize one of his quotes because he has a really long quote that's amazing. And I'm going to put this in the show notes. But before I ask you the question, I want to give you this quote. And so keep that in mind when you give your definition. But he says, people who put excellence in the first place have the patience to end up with success. An additional burden for the victim of the success mentality is that he is threatened by the success of others and he resents real excellence. In contrast, the person that is fascinated by quality is excited when he sees it in others. And this goes back to when you were talking about creating an environment in your trainings and all of that stuff. And so really you're creating people who are not driven by just to beat down their teammates or other people, but to enjoy the success on the court by excelling in training and in competition. So keeping that in mind, what is your definition of being beyond athletic?
Well, I guess it's a well-rounded, you know, obviously sport is a great method to keep you healthy, to keep you motivated, to set goals and achieve. And, you know, and look in your case, Ryan, you've seen the world. You've experienced so much through volleyball. You know, sport can do a lot for you, but if it is the be all end all of your life and you have a career ending injury, then where are you? So, you know, I guess you have to have a balance. You know, you have to have a B plan and of what else is important to you in your life outside of the sport in case, God forbid, you know, it gets taken away from you. So You know, I'd say just balance is a big key. One of the things you just, you know, touched on is celebrating, you know, your teammates' success. That all, in my opinion, if you're a self-confident person in general, in life, then you won't be intimidated by the success of others. You'll be able to celebrate it because you're not insecure and you're confident in your own, you're confident in your own abilities.
Fantastic. Be balanced and have a B plan. So that's Dave Deuser. Thank you so much for your time and all of what you shared with us. And I hope someday maybe to have you on again to talk a little bit more specifically to volleyball players about some keys for sport. So as like questions and comments come in about the show, I'll definitely keep that in mind. I hope you'd be down for that.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Well, have a great day. And people out there listening, just remember, whatever you can do to get to the next level, do it. If you need a mentor, reach out, offer to add value. And in sport, with psychological part of sport and training, buy in completely. Believe that you cannot be defeated. So a lot of the keys that we went over with Dave, thank you so much. And until next time.
Thanks, Ryan.
Did you like the show? Leave a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher.com so others will find us. And share the love. Think of one person that could benefit and send them the link for this episode. For more resources and tips, go to beyondathletic.com or tweet us at beyondathletic. I appreciate and thank you for listening.
What we doing live? Echoes in eternity.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
And this concludes our Chicago show. Please stay tuned.